Alok Kejriwal is one of the most respected entrepreneurs in the startup ecosystem of India. His company Games to Win was sold to Disney after having accomplished a lot in the gaming world. Now, this conversation is split up into two parts. The first part of the podcast is all about his business journey, his viewpoint on game design and gaming entrepreneurship as a career, and of course, all the business opportunities that he's experienced in his life, the business learnings that he's had in his life, and how those opportunities and learnings are getting transferred into the 2020s and 2030s. I asked Alok Kejriwal a lot of questions about his journey and his mindset, and he gave the shortest, simplest, sharpest answers. This one is another one of those episodes where it kind of felt like an hour-long MBA. Check it out. You'll learn a lot. You'll gain a lot from Alok Kejriwal on The Ranveer Show. Mr. A to the K, Alok Kejriwal, from socks to software. This isn't going to be one of those standard entrepreneurship-based conversations. This is going to go into a lot of places, including spiritual places. Thank you for being on The Ranveer Show, sir. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My honor, boss.
So let's get down and dirty. How did this story begin? Because you are one of the most respected guys, and also, you know, I'm not chadowing you, but I feel like you're one of the OGs in like the startup space in India. One of the earlier guys who's still stuck around.
Yeah.
And you're an investor now. You're still very active in the space.
Furniture.
So, sir, yeah. Where did the story start?
So it starts with grace, to be very honest, right? I mean, I'm the moza wala banda hu, yaar. Main moza bana raha hu mere father ki factory mein. Now, how can a moza wala, and I'm an MCOM, right? So MCOM to bahut respectable degree hai. Technically, it's master of nothing. I think two or three things were very important ever since I was growing up. Yeah, I liked science. I liked the science of life, right? And being born and brought up in a Marwari family business, the whole idea was, yeah, dhanda karo, galle par baitho. You know, typically the mentality which kind of, I think, ruins a lot of people, but nevertheless. So I worked in my business. But having said that, something incredible happened to me in my life in 98-99, and that was the internet, right? The internet came to India, and I just luckily found it. I've spoken about an incredible story in my first book where, one of the biggest, most expensive machines I had bought personally on my guarantee that I'll run it by from my father broke down and it couldn't start. And when I happened to look on the internet and I found the answer, it was a 5 rupee washer that I needed to change in the machine, and it started out. So that was the internet. Wahan se boss, the journey became like nothing but a magical ride, right? So investors, business, international, and gaming, which became the kind of centerpiece of my skill, remained, my profession. So yeah, that's the journey. That's how it's been.
Why did you delve into the world of gaming? Like, I know you're someone who utilizes the power of waves.
Right.
So you saw the internet coming in, you created something there. You saw the mobile wave coming in, you created something there.
Right.
But why specifically gaming? And this is like, you started it way back, way before PUBG or, Fortnite or anything like that.
Right, right. That's a really good question. To be honest, right, the one single emotion that I saw whenever I saw people playing games, and I saw the Olympics, and it was a very funny epiphany for me. Why are so many millions of people watching people running or people competing without them even? They're not going to win. They're just going to watch people win. Gaming is very engaging. There's a very strong thread of engagement that runs through gaming for the viewer and the watcher and the participant. So I said, yaar, agar kisi ko engage karenge na, if we get engaged people, then everything will happen, because the whole business is about engagement. So that became my DNA.
But did you learn coding yourself? Like, usually what happens is people stop themselves from attempting businesses out of that thing of, okay, but I may not be able to do it, quite likely because I'm not a computer programmer.
Correct. So, they say that, college and school doesn't teach you anything. But to be very honest, whatever little I studied, I learned a lot. and economics, in the first economics 101, there is a very simple principle that the capitalist is one who gets capital, people, machine and land together and makes things happen. So I just said, "Theek hai yaar, I can do one part, the rest will happen," and it happened.
That's kind of like what Mark Cuban did with his life. Like, he wasn't a coder himself, but his roommate was a coder and he just saw business opportunity there. So, sorry to interject,
I mean, even Steve Jobs, right? He's an artist at heart, right? And he's built one of the greatest tech companies 100%. Alive. So it happens all the time.
Yeah, I think that's the message that needs to put out there for Indian kids who are trying to get into the world of entrepreneurship. Definitely coding is an important modern day skill, but it's not the be all and end all of your life. Like, right. If you just have a hunch, if you want to take your life somewhere, it is possible.
Right.
It is possible to take it where you wish.
Absolutely.
But I want to take you back to like post college.
Right.
Is it true that you had a role to play in creating the whole Indian Idol SMS situation? Like, the whole Indian Idol voting situation. I kind of know what happened.
Right.
I got gossip from a fellow startup guy. But I'd actually like to hear it from you.
That's such a beautiful memory. In a way, yes. You know, Indian Idol was launching. And this was the second big show after KBC. The irony was that I was a Star invested company. My first company contested was invested by Star. So when we went to Star and, you know, we talked about engagement, they were already too successful with KBC and there was no scope. So when Indian Idol came, we said, "Boss, you can't call up people and expect them to wait and never get through, right? Let's do something which is so easy." And SMS at that time was the tool, was the power, right? That was the currency. So we said, "Boss, let's empower ourselves with SMS." And we presented this idea that not only will it become more engaging, but actually we'll make money, because when people send SMS, you'll even also be able to generate money. Now, people, you know, Sony, Star, Sony, Endemol, Fremantle, they were like really genuinely interested in the power of the platform. And we created that platform where any mobile phone con India could vote for a Sony Indian Idol participant, which is the magic. But at the end of it, it became such a money-making machine that it was incredible. So yeah, we put the platform together.
But, okay, can I take you back to right after college?
Please.
Like, what was your thinking back then? Because, I mean, a lot of people who try getting into the startup space, they would probably look at a career like yours and say, okay, that's something like what I want to do.
Right.
So for that 22-year-old, 23-year-old who's currently scared of the world, could you give some perspective that you had?
That's an incredible question. You know, actually, I wish if people really peeked at what I was doing at 22 and 23, they'd be shocked. So the first thing I did at 22 was got married.
Oh, wow.
And
nice.
And my life was all about my family business, right? It was all, see, one thing remained that I think to me, a real proof of a fact that you can run a business is profit and profitability. And therefore the kind of, you know, the generosity that comes around profitability. Because when you become profitable, everyone prospers, right? So I was doing exactly like a staid old family business of transportation and knitting socks. But I did have one insight that I would love to share and hope people listen. All along the way, right, from the time you begin to the time you die, opportunities keep coming. They keep presenting themselves on your door. They actually ring your doorbell and they say, "Hey, I'm Mr. Opportunity. I'm Miss Opportunity. You know, what are you going to do with me?" If you train yourself to look at these opportunities, and many of them will be missed by you. But once you get trained to say something is changing in the air, something is going to happen. Can I be a part of that? And that is what I trained myself to do. So I did small chunnu munnu businesses while I was doing my socks business. And that made me kind of alert that when a big shift happens, maybe, you know, mera number bhi aa jayega. And that is what happened when the internet started.
So that big shift for you was the internet wave or the mobile wave. That's what you capitalized on.
Exactly.
How old were you when your first big business story began? Like, at what age did you really start working towards your first business that got acquired?
So I think I was 27. But I'll be honest, I had actually done something quite incredible even before that. So even in my staid old 35-year-old factory of family socks, I was the first guy who got a chance to export socks from India, and it had never been done before. And that became a bigger business than my father in 5 years. So I started this contest to win business of mine when I was 26, 27. 28 was when I launched it. And I had my first funding when I was 29, and then everything became history. So yeah, it was interesting.
What's that process of raising money like for your business when you're coming from a bootstrap background where you've done a very traditional business model? You're earning money, you're putting it back into the business. And then suddenly you say that, hold up, maybe I'll take someone else's money, give them some equity. A lot of people are afraid to go down that path. Again, it's kind of an Indian mentality where we're kind of brought up being told to play it safe. So I'm sure you had to do some rewiring for yourself at that point.
To be honest, right? I mean, boss, when you don't have any money, then whoever gives you money, you kind of feel very good about. Having said that, I think at that time and age, right, 98, 99, there wasn't the culture of VC and raise and exit. Nobody knew anything, right? We were kind of people who were setting the rules for ourselves. So people were kind, you know, the terms were simple. The understanding was easy. Monies were small. You know, you're raising like $500,000, $1 million, not $1 billion that people raise today. So I don't think there was so much of a resistance. But having said that, I think the bigger culture shock was now there are people in suits who come to your office, which is like downtrodden, and they tell you about these, you know, big five ideas that you've never heard of before. So I think management was a bigger shock than anything else.
Yeah, like what did it give you other than money? Like what's massive advantage of having investors?
That's a great question. And I'll tell you the biggest, you know, magic that happened to me was one of our investors was SoftBank. And now people know SoftBank today because of the great deals it did. But, you know, we were a very early SoftBank investee company. And one of the, you know, investors there said in about 6 months of seeing me and my performance, he said, Alok, yaar, you know what? Forget India. You know, he gave me three options. He said, come to Australia, come to China, and come to one more place. And I said, why will I do that? He says, because the power of your idea is so large, you need to be in a market that can support that large idea. So the investor took me to China. He set me up in an office. He gave us capital to start. He hired people for us and introduced us to everybody in the ecosystem. And that is the power of an investor.
So you lived in China for a bit and you worked in China for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, I mean, this might sound a little naive, but I feel like what China was in say a 2001, 2002, India could possibly be that right now. Do you see any parallels?
I completely see parallels, right? I mean, the same kind of a little bit of, you know, haves and have nots, you know, the difference between the super rich and not so middle, you know, not so rich. And also technology, right? Everyone's got a mobile phone now in India, which was a fact even 15 years ago. So yeah, there is a big parallel now.
So what's it like working in China? Because honestly, with the whole current political scenario, Indians generally have a very villainized version of China in their heads.
Right. So there are pros and cons. I think the biggest pros that I learned was efficiency. People did what they were told. You know, the Indian concept, ki maine socha, mujhe laga, those words don't exist over there. They do what they're supposed to do. And everything is orderly, right? Because it's a state government-run operation, obviously there isn't too much confusion. But at the end of the day, boss, you know, our country is our country. In India is, every time you come across situations which put you in a, you know, in places outside, you really realize what a beautiful nation we have. And with all the negatives, it's still, I'll give an example, right? So when you want to get funded, you have to ask the government. When you want to sell your company, you have to ask the government. When you want to assemble with 25 people for an office party, you have to ask the government. We don't do all that in India. So it was very restrictive for me. And of course, language was a huge problem. But they have a market and they have investors. So it worked out.
But, you know, what you said that, you know, you always turn back to India. You think our country is our country. What does India have that China doesn't?
I think a phenomenal talent of people who are very diverse at their skills, which is, you know, of course, not so unique to India. To be really honest, and if this might sound blunt, we have a democracy. You know, you can sue people. You can get things done. You can fight for your right. You can say, I want this. There's no one watching over you. There's no one telling you what to do. I can log into Google and check what I want. So these are very big wins, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure that level of control and patrolling limits your thought process if you've grown up in a place like that. So that's what I've heard a lot of my friends say about China in general, that yes, it's an advanced country. Yes, there's opportunity. Yes, there's positivity, hard work. But they all are taught to think in tubes. And I know it sounds politically incorrect, and I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm just saying that culturally.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way they are. And they seem to be very comfortable with it. We're very comfortable dissenting, which is great. That's what makes our country so great.
Yeah, 100%. So why did you come back straight up?
So I sold my company. I got really lucky. To be very honest, the business wasn't flourishing. It was actually going sideways. And like all startups, right? See, these are like relay races. Nah? I ran one lap, then I ran the second, the third, the fourth. Now the baton was still in my hand. Yeah. So main uska karu kya? I can't do everything. So I built a business, I built people, I built a platform. Revenue was taking a long time to fructify. And as luck and chance would have it, and again, grace of God and Guru, Walt Disney saw what we had done, saw the team, saw the operation. And they said, we need this for ourselves. You know, we don't need it for anyone else. So they made us an offer that was too hard to refuse. And yeah, that was it.
Right. But I mean, in China, did you get any entrepreneurial learnings that you brought back? Or was there, while you were running this business, were you thinking of, okay, this is working in China. Maybe I can come and do it in India.
Yeah. So it's a great question. You know, the Indian Idol business that you just spoke about, that was born and bred in China. We learned the power of mobile engagement in China. We built our SMS platform in China. And then when I came back to India, I said, "Arey baap re, yahan par to SMS chalu ho gaya yaar. Let's bring what we bought from China into India." That's how it started.
So this is like 2005-ish.
Yeah, 2005-ish.
So, how does it feel being a young entrepreneur in the mid-2000s? Like where you sold like one business. What's your thought process then?
I think this is a very interesting question. It's a little deep question. I had all these expectations. I told my wife, that there'll be this one number that will come in our bank account. And the day that happens, now, boss, you see what happens. Our life will change, blah, blah, blah. That day came, the amount came in the bank. The company got sold. Walt Disney became the acquirer. Nothing changed in the life. So I realized that sometimes, some of these goals are very artificial and shallow. But I think at the entrepreneurial heart, right, doing things and achieving things really keeps the entrepreneur going. And it is a really great learning that, there's so much more to do in what I had started that the real journey began then.
But what goals did you then bring to India? Like what did you turn into your goals?
Good question. I think the thing was, we were not adopting technology or we were not using technology at all. Even in 2005-06, right? Bandwidth was such a problem. Internet was slow, if you remember. But there were a lot of problems. And gaming, which is really my heart and soul, was still not understood. So I one more insight I had was people in India were not buying consoles and those, very expensive machines to play hardcore games. To me, that was a great opportunity that, boss, India's internet will come alive. We will start gaming. And I started my Games to Win business with the internet and the browser as the starting point.
But did you have any hope that it will grow in India? Like, were you anticipating that or was it kind of a fluke?
It was a fluke. Yeah. There was no hope because there was no plan. You know how things are in India, right? Sometimes things just don't move. Having said that, I also want to share that, I had learned something very precious in my two businesses of socks and my mobile business in China. I had learned the power of export. And I learned that, if you create value and it is interesting value, you don't have to only be restricted to your country. And that is what I applied to Games to Win. And to be honest, India did not happen. India never happened. But the business got born and brought up in India and it flourished internationally.
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the learnings I've had as well, talking to people like yourself, that I feel Indians my age and younger consciously need to look at the world as the market and not just India, well as interior India, though. There's a lot of opportunity there as well, but there's also a lot of opportunity outside.
Absolutely.
So, honestly, I feel if you have the bandwidth to play both games, do it. That's my thinking. I also have to ask you about a lot of personal questions, which we'll get to later. By personal, I mean personal about me. I'm a self-obsessed YouTuber. I need to get my coaching session from AK. But, okay, here's something I've been thinking of. You're someone who capitalized on the computer wave, the internet wave, the mobile wave. Why didn't you capitalize on the social media wave? Like, what did you see in the social media wave that stopped you from, you know, creating that? Why didn't you want to start an Indian Facebook or whatever?
Sure. So that's interesting. So the early social media websites that came out when I was getting into my third business were very clumsy. You know, we had Orkut that was all about spamming. And then we had Friendster and we had a couple of other sites. We had this very large site that came out of the US, which is a music site. And they didn't seem to kind of create the energy that we see today. Also remember that, you know, connections and connectivity was very sparse. So people weren't that connected. And I was restless, right? I am an entrepreneur. I have to create value. So I just took, yeah, there are many horses in the stable, right? You catch one, you sit on one, and then you saddle him up and you ride into the sunrise, not sunset. So gaming was mine and I just did that.
But was there ever a hunch, or is there currently a hunch of you getting into the social media game? And do you also see potential for growth there, even today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, boss. I mean, if you look at PUBG, if you look at Fortnite, if you look at all these massive businesses that have been created out of the magic of gaming meets social media, definitely. And I have a deep regret that, you know, I never understood it or never bothered to go deep into social gaming. And it was even before even these guys, you know, Facebook gaming, Farmville came out of there. They all spammed us, but that doesn't matter. So I missed that wave and I completely kind of ignored it. And that's fine. I mean, I'm reconciled to it.
Yeah. You know, I once tweeted this thing when the whole PUBG ban was happening, that I hope that your urge to play PUBG is replaced by your urge to build the next PUBG.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel that gaming as a business boils down a lot to your creativity. And I actually saw this old interview of yours, I think from 5-6 years back. It was done at the Art of Living Foundation, where you described how you had created a game about parking called Parking Frenzy.
Yeah.
And that reached number one on the Apple Store.
Yes, absolutely.
But that basically, that idea boiled down to your creativity. It boiled down to you thinking that, okay, this is a life problem. It's relatable. Yeah. It can easily become a game.
Yep.
You had a mathematical formula for creating a good game, which I'll let you only expand on.
Right.
But yeah, could you actually talk about Parking Frenzy a little
Absolutely.
Bit?
My most favorite game, number one game in the US and number one app in the US, which has never been achieved by an Indian company before. And even now, very simple insight, right? People find parking challenging, but it's, once you complete a successful parking, it's satisfying. So what we call, right, the fulfillment loop and the instant gratification is so simple. Park a car, park it well, you say, wow, I did something great. So what about if I give you like a series of parking challenges while you're sitting in your armchair, so you're not sweating in your car and dying because someone is honking. You're sitting in an armchair, you're playing with this beautiful steering wheel and car, and it was a great idea. What I did not know, which kind of actually fueled the game, was the fact that that game became a learning tool for a lot of young tween and teen girls in the US to learn how to park and drive. And they said that, you know, we've always been teased and tormented by our family and friends about how badly we park. But here comes a game that teaches us how to park well.
Now, since you've had success as a gaming entrepreneur, my outlook on that kind of a business is that once you figured the basic formula of, okay, these are the kind of games that work, this is the kind of team you need, these are the kind of ideas you should have, then things are, I won't say easy to scale, but at least you have some kind of a set pattern to walk down on. So for, say, a teenager who's listening to this conversation, who wants to get into game design, or he wants to build his own gaming company, first of all, I'd like to say it's possible. But secondly, I'd like to ask you, sir, like, What is the actual process? Like, from the point of view, ideating a game, thinking of the first idea, to actually seeing it in someone's phone, what's the whole process? Like, who do you have to hire? What do you have to keep in mind while designing? Can a just a normal creative person who doesn't know coding, can that person design games?
Yes. So the answer is yes to all. Yes to all of the above. And there is a very simple, easy, and 100% sure shot methodology to starting and owning your game company. The beginning and the beginning of that is to work in a games company. So the I'm observing a lot of very successful entrepreneurs in gaming, especially in India and globally. They've all cut their teeth in established gaming companies, learned everything about games, the people, the craft, the technology, the methodology, got paid to do it, got famous in doing it, and then branched out and did their own stuff. So no longer do you need to sit in a cave and just wonder that, oh, how will I start it? Gaming companies will very happily, you know, embrace you with open arms. And in one of our OKRs, you know, our management objective and key results that we just did, one of our guys said that I'm here because I want to start a gaming company and can you help me? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So that's the kind of ambition people have. So join a games company.
But is there, like, you think, like, the next big Ubisoft or the next big EA, do you think there's possibility of it coming out of India? Or do you think it's a sure shot that it'll come out of India?
You know, I think those references are good to start with. But there is no longer a global, you know, a PUBG is rare, a Fortnite is rare. Also, why bother with what this game can become or what you can become from India? You know, I think even if you entertain 1 million people to start with, and then 2, and then 10, it's a very large kind of achievement. Right? If I draw the analogy, it's like saying, can I become the largest YouTube channel in the country, right? Or in the world? Yeah, you can. But, you know, is that even practical, right? Just do stuff that you love. Build games that you feel like you want to play all your life. And people will play them along with you.
So I'm guessing you entered the gaming business because of that pure love for gaming. And then you suddenly had to sell it to Disney because they made an offer you couldn't refuse.
Right.
Do you feel any kind of emptiness after you've sold it? Because again, an entrepreneur keeps ticking like an athlete. So Absolutely. Once your career is over, what do you do with that athleticism?
It's a great question. Yeah, I felt a very deep void. I felt depression, like a feeling of depression, not depression. The good news was that and this is the most strange story that I must share with you. I was handcuffed, right? They call it like a lock-in. I signed a non-compete clause to not do mobile gaming for 3 years, okay? Now comes the twist to the tale. The mobile gaming of that era was Nokia phones, you know, those Java phones. And I felt very, like, disheartened. I said, yeah, what will I do in my life? Where am I going to go? So I signed that in 2004-05. And the day and the year it got over, a year later, the iPhone was launched. So actually that non-compete gave me a resurrection to start my business all over again on a form factor that would rule the world. So I think that any entrepreneur who kind of masters a certain skill will keep surfacing over and over again in newer avatars and keep creating value for himself or herself all through his lifetime.
Could you name some like famous mainstream entrepreneurs and their associated skills just to give the audience
some
perspective?
Sure. I mean, I want to name the most traditional entrepreneurs to make my point so that we don't have to always refer to technology, right? Look at the Tatas. The Tatas formula is from cement to steel to TCS to philanthropy to anything that you care about, you know, insurance, hospitals. Why do they succeed when others don't? Because they have a blueprint, they have a formula, and it works, right? So I think families like them or businesses like, look at Amazon, right? Let's leap to the biggest and the best. This guy started as a bookseller, boss, and now he's powering up the whole World Wide Web. You know, Amazon Web Servers run the globe. So how does he succeed in what he does? I think these are very clear formats and patterns that if understood and imbibed, can easily give you success and repeated success.
Got it. Speaking about success, I feel a curse of an entire generation, and I'm speaking about mine and possibly even people younger than myself, is that we end up putting a lot of pressure on ourselves about early success or fast success just because of the nature of social media, the nature of that social media that was given to us in our hands when we were 11 and 12 years old. Yeah. So there's a very different outlook on success, I think, compared to when you were 26, 27. What advice do you have there? And also, did you also face a similar issue? Like, did you feel that your time's running out at 27, 28?
Well, quite the contrary, right? In the age and time I became successful, people used to say, "Acha, he's just started working or he just started doing something." People didn't even care, right? People didn't know. In this age and time, if you've not become a millionaire or billionaire by 30, like, you're done, which is wrong. Let me rephrase this conversation or reframe this conversation with better references, right? So some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world, and I think Wall Street Journal has a great article on that, especially in tech, and this is going to shock you, have come after the age of 50. There are lots and lots of Wall Street bankers who flourished after the age of 55 or 60. You know, George Soros. I think Warren Buffett made his biggest wealth after he was 70 years old, right? So one is, we always look at these young dot-com or internet guys and never look at the old people, which is wrong. Also, I think you burn out very quickly. So I feel that getting success at a little later age is a much surer bet of lasting out than burning out and never having anything to do in your life again, which is terrible.
What happens when you get success at a later age versus getting it in your mid-20s?
So when you're in your mid-20s, like, sorry, I don't want to name someone, but like, you take Sabir Bhatia, right? Great guy, phenomenal entrepreneur, sold Hotmail. And, you know, he's been set, right? We haven't heard anything from him yet. If you're kind of doing stuff and struggling and trying to make something happen, I think the fire keeps burning. And that fire is what kind of keeps you going till you reach like a much larger outcome than a small thing that excites you and then never gets repeated again.
So for you, what are your goals now? Like, what is keeping you ticking? What's the motivation?
So I feel that the greatest report card for an entrepreneur is a public listed company. If I can list my company and face the slaps of the public market every day and either shine or, you know, kind of suffer. So I want to take my company public, which is GamesToing. And I want to prove that, you know, I can run a listed company versus just a funded company. And that's what's keeping me going. And there isn't any gaming company that's listed in India yet. So I want to be amongst the first.
What happens to your life as a businessman once you're listed on the stock market?
Three or four dramatic changes happen. One is your vision or your thinking becomes quarter on quarter versus year on year. And very, very rarely decade on decade. You can't think decade on decade. The other thing is that you become very acutely aware of the real reason that a business exists, which is profitability and returns to shareholders. Which I think is a great thing in the internet space, because a lot of people don't care about that. And that's fine. But I do. And I feel that it's like a really great kind of reminder of what really matters, right? But the third thing, the most important thing, I want to prove that, you know, gaming as a profession, a lot of my employees who came in early had to fight their parents and their guardians who said, "What nonsense, how can you join a gaming company? Kya kar raha hai? Infosys mein jaakar naukri." You know, joined Infosys. I want to prove to them that, boss, your children can be more successful and more wealthy joining a gaming company than joining some 50-year-old software company. So the Infosys of today is gaming, not software as a service.
Got it. So then, like, if I had to ask you three massive mistakes of your business career, like, I'm not talking about whether you regret them or not, but just three decisions that weren't correct in retrospect, what would you want to highlight for young businessmen?
Yeah, fantastic. One is saying no to money. I had a term sheet from General Electric and I said no to it in the peak of the dot-com boom because of something really stupid called valuation. So never bother about valuation. Get the money in, build a business, eventually it'll all work out. It doesn't matter, right? So that is one. The second thing was, I want to play a global business, but I didn't set up a global office too early. So, you know, you raised a point about, Alok, what about social and why didn't you get into social gaming? I didn't get into social gaming because I didn't make the effort. I should have moved myself from India to San Francisco, sat there and done whatever I had to do, which I didn't do. And I think the third thing, to be really honest, is I've been a little conservative in my growth style. I value profit over growth. I value a P&L over balance sheet. I don't keep on just taking money just because it's available. And I sometimes feel that that's a restrictive ideology. One has to expand your mind. And I think the new wealth creation tool is changing habits. So if you look at Ola or Uber, they change the way you travel. If you look at the food delivery apps, they change the way you eat food. I think I ignored that. You know, I should have said, can I change the way people play games versus building a profitable gaming company? So yeah, these are the three big regrets.
Wow. Change habits. That's the big business opportunity, you guys, whoever's listening to this.
It's huge, but boss. Huge.
Can you explain? Because I'm sure this is also, while it's coming from your sense of experience, you've also learned this from some kind of case study you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. I met the lead investor in Flipkart 10 years ago. And I kind of mocked him. I said, boss, what's wrong with you? Yeah, you're paying money after money to this company that's just burning everything up. And he said, Alok, do you know what this company is doing? They're changing the way you shop. And you'll never shop again the same way. And I was aghast. I said, wow. That's what they did. So that is what changing habit means. I mean, it's very hard to change your own habits. Imagine if you can change the habit of a country. It's invaluable. Invaluable.
So you've also had like quite a long career now as an investor. Like, you invest in startups yourself. How did that start? Did that start because you just had the money to spend? Like, and you wanted to figure out your own, like, you know, you thought, okay, this is another adventure. Or was there some kind of long-term thinking behind it where you're like, you know, let's play this game as well?
Actually, it was more of a passion. There were so many entrepreneurs who were struggling and who needed small amounts of money. I'm a small ticket investor, not a large ticket investor. They wanted like
a loan. Could you break down the numbers just to like for the listeners?
So like I'm under a crore guy. I'm not 5 crores or 10 crores. And it's restricted now. I've kind of tone down that investment even more, and I'll come back to you why. So these small checks I wrote out were to people who I knew or whom I respected or whom I wanted to support, right? It was never about ROI, that if I give 20 lakhs, I'm going to get back 2 crores. Eventually, none of my investments really paid out, or they haven't paid out yet, none of them. They've all failed. And what I've learned is that I'm not cut out to be an investor. I'm cut out to be an entrepreneur and I'm cut out to be a mentor. Because to be an investor, you have to have a very different DNA. You know, you have to be harsh, you have to be cruel, you have to be demanding, you have to have the courage to tell people to shut shop and go home. And I don't have that heart. So actually, I've been a very poor investor.
But are all investors across the board like that? Like, are they all brutal? Is that what you think, that's the core skill?
Some of the most successful of them have been very true to their why. You know, why have they become investors? Because they've taken 1 rupee or $1 and they've promised to give their investors $10. To do that, yes, you will have to be. You know, there's a very world famous VC whose mantra it is to say, in about 3 or 4 years, chuck out the founder and get a professional CEO. That's their mantra. That's how they build businesses. Right? And if you get money from them, you already know their mantra, but you take that money in. So, you know, playing on founders against each other, you know, trying to put so much pressure on growth and so forth, it's never ending.
It's a dirty game?
No, not at all. It's not a dirty, it's a noble game, boss. All the businesses that we love so much today and we enjoy and our life has become so much easy is because of investors, because of VCs. Not at all. It's just that it's the quality of money that comes with a different set of demands. That's all. Everybody, so, every money that, like, sorry, just to interrupt. if your mom and my mom lends monies to each other, they come with a set of demand, right? And what is that demand? Love. I just want to give you money for you to grow. That's their demand. But if I take money from investors, yeah, they have a set of demands.
Got it. You know, when you roam around in those circles with venture capitalists or angel investors, I mean, I know you can't group them, but if you just roam, if you talk to a room full of people like that who invest in startups, what are the conversations like, and what is the overall human vibe like?
Right. So there are four or five large currents. One is the largeness of the opportunity, right? They don't really care about how important a certain business is to you. It may be because that's your passion, but they want outcomes, right? I'll change the way India travels. I change the way India buys groceries. So that's the largeness. And you may or may not have that large ambition. The second are outcomes, right? So the whole idea is venture capital exists because it gives traditional investors a big kick on their money. So if I have, you know, I'm a very conservative investor of Harvard's, Wharton's, I'm putting money at 1 or 2%. I want to give 10% to a VC who could probably give me another 1% on my money, which is 10%, right? So the multiples of exit is a very important factor. And that happens when the conversation in the room is, if I give you 10 million bucks, can you return me 100? Versus if I give you 10 million bucks, how will you build your business? How long will you flourish? So exits are as important in the conversation as entries, which is a very interesting part of the conversation. You know, in all conversations, when you talk about building a business, you never say when you're going to sell the business or when you're going to exit the business. This conversation happens in parallel to when you're starting a business.
Beautiful. So and for the 2020s and 2030s, what would you like to tell young Indian entrepreneurs? What should they keep in mind? What industry should they target?
I mean, it's amazing, boss. The world has shrunk, and with COVID now, it's shrunk even more. So I think our ability to code, our ability to speak the English language, and the ability to address, you know, I think global entertainment formats, you know, I think they just need to look at problems that they face, try to solve them in a simple way. And if they find that as a global opportunity, just do it globally. It's so simple.
Like, or target the world as your market.
Absolutely. That's what you think. Yeah, I mean, food ordering and food delivery is a global problem, right? If you look at the wallet business, right, the way it was started, not anymore. I mean, what is the premise? The premise is, why do I need to keep looking for my wallet and take out money and get stuck for change? Now, it was started with a brilliant insight, and that's a problem that exists worldwide. So these are exportable solutions that thrive worldwide.
So and like, what about interior India? Like, is there a market there for certain kinds of products? Should young entrepreneurs be targeting the interiors of the country? Is that part of the country getting richer and therefore, you know, more juicy for business professionals?
So there's obviously a very large discrepancy or difference between the GDP of the country. It's layered, and you know, as you go more rural and smaller towns, affordability begins to diminish very, very rapidly. So here's the thing, right? There's going to be huge demand in these markets forever because everybody is going to be consuming content or goods. The question is, what kind of business model do you do which services that wallet power and makes you successful and viable, right? You don't want to be just doing things because there's demand and not being viable. So, I mean, if you understand this, that 80 or 90% of India uses a sachet as a shampoo. They don't own a shampoo bottle, but they use a small sachet. Now, what does that tell us? That there is a positive kind of inclination to use shampoo, but they can only afford a sachet. So it's all about the business that you want to run. In my opinion, very frugal customers become very hard to service over long periods of time because your cost of creating your business keeps on growing, but their share to your revenue keeps remaining flat or maybe even degrowing. And it's always a big challenge. But, you know, there are certain businesses which can just fly because the consumption can be so large. And gaming is one of them.
So that's actually the core thought behind why you say, okay, market to the rest of the world as well. Probably an easier market there.
Right. I will just take an example for the audience to hear. So if I make a game and I spend, say, 1 year making it, I have sunk my costs and my money, right? Now the game is made. Now, even if this game becomes very, very popular worldwide and definitely in India, I don't have any more cost to make that game get serviced, except the bandwidth cost, which is marginal. So that's a great example of one-time investment that can have perpetual revenue.
That's crazy. And, you know, if you had to... Okay, let me take that again. And if you were born in the year 1995... what would your thought process be right now as a 25-year-old? What would you be thinking about business? And I know that you've probably worked with a lot of 25-year-olds. I'm sure there are 25-year-olds in your office today.
Right,
when you look at them, do you put yourself in their shoes and ask yourself, no, I probably would be thinking this way, or I shouldn't be thinking like that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're all, I think if I were 25, I'd be spoiled for choice in what I want to do. I'd probably have 3 jobs in my pocket anyway. So I don't have to worry about sustaining myself or sustaining a lifestyle. It's a very good question, because the world has also gone very far ahead. So, you know, now if you want to create, say, an entertainment app, right? I mean, some of the largest entertainment apps got removed from the country, but how easy is it to replicate it? It's very hard. So I think some of the pillars of an internet-driven industry have gone too deep in the ground to create yourself. I think there are certain opportunities that are getting created by the service providers that you have around you. But I'll be honest with you, right? From the 1900s to 1995, there is always an opportunity to do business, boss. It is never about an era or a time. It's always about the entrepreneur and what he or she sees. So there will always be entrepreneurs, no matter which year you're living in.
One piece of advice that I've got from a lot of older accomplished entrepreneurs is that you should definitely focus on one single thing. Now, I'd like to give you my own case, which is that a content company is flourishing. It's doing well. That's not sustainable in the long term as a career for myself. Like, definitely you'll get fame, you'll get power, you'll make money off of brand associations. But the long-term game has to be a products-based game.
Yeah.
So I'm forced to play more than one game. There's no way I can use the power of focus here. And when I step into that world of products, I mean, after scanning maybe 10, 20 opportunities, I've boiled myself down to 2 opportunities, which we'll speak about offline. But there are these 2 opportunities there. And then this is the third company that we're constantly growing. We're creating more YouTube channels every year and all that. Do you still agree that that advice of a power focus works here? Or can you tackle that power focus problem by hiring extremely well and just being the face of things?
No, absolutely not. I completely agree to the power focus. Everybody, see, if you hire someone who's as good as you, they'll probably be entrepreneurs themselves. So either you invest in entrepreneurs or become an entrepreneur yourself. There's no other way.
So, but the solution to power focus is kind of invest in people, right? Like, as in, no?
No, it's just marrying an idea or marrying a product, like you said, and then completely getting obsessed by it and doing whatever you need to do to make it, in your view, the best product or service offering in the world. And then everything else will come around it. People, money, opportunity. Oh, theek hai. But I think to begin with, you can't say, I'm going to ride 2 horses together, one with one leg on one and another leg on other. You'll fall down and break your bones.
And what's the most common mistake you see, like, people my age make? Is it this exactly?
No, it's not that. It's a very different mistake. People give up. You know, they want, I think, the power or the lure or the lucre of instant gratification has become so deeply manifested in the young person's mind. If your startup doesn't do well in 1 year, you give up. If your relationship doesn't do well in 2 years, you give up. So unfortunately, businesses take 10, 20 years to flourish. And I see a lot of very promising young people just abandon something for something else, as if it's like, you know, that's a game they're playing. But that's so sad, because they never, gave justice to their first idea in the first place.
Yeah, I know you've got a spiritual side as well. And spirituality, one of the gifts that it gives you is the ability to scan people a little bit better, because you have a better understanding of yourself. You become a calmer person. You have a better understanding of the human mindset in general. So when you, someone like you who has business experience as well as spiritual experience, calls another human being promising, what is that blueprint of the word promising in that person?
So to begin with, everyone is promising. There's no one who's not promising. It's just the fact that they want to push themselves or extend themselves more than some other people. That is when they become more interesting. I think just two or three principles that keep on standing out in all the people that I've seen and scanned in my life. One is utmost sincerity in what you do, right? That really takes out the difference from the milk and the water. I mean, sincere people just remain sincere. And two, I think values and ethics. I mean, the biggest and the best now are falling and failing in our country and other countries because their morals get warped all of a sudden. Now, I don't know what pressure they suddenly face when they've already attained so much. Why do they slip and fall? I don't know. But I think if your morals and your ethics and your compass is in the right direction, a lot of pain gets sorted. And that's the kind of people that begin to just shine at you. And the third is this, what I call relentless kind of energy to incrementally improve. And I call it RII, R, relentless incremental improvement. It's taken from a Japanese term called Kaizen, but I, you know, kind of expanded it more. You just have to be obsessed by improving every single minute.
But even when you're 45 years old, like, what do you improve in there?
Everything, boss, you just got started, you know. So, I mean, again, Warren Buffett, right? His best investments have come after he was 70. So you learn, you learn, you learn, you trade. So I don't think anyone is perfect, and you can keep on getting better and better at your craft and life. It's a dual kind of game that you can play.
Yeah. Do you feel like when you're younger as an entrepreneur, you were a little bit more brutal to yourself than when you get older and you've achieved some level of success? It sounds like an obvious question, but I don't know if the answer is that obvious.
No, it's not really about brutality. It's about knowledge. It's all about knowing what to punish yourself for and what not to punish yourself for. And when you're young, you don't have that insight and that experience, so you punish yourself for everything.
Like, could you give an example of punishing yourself for something which doesn't really require punishment?
Say, for example, you know, I let's say that handing people, right? Now, when you're young and you have people in your business who don't work with you or don't do your work and you get angry with them and they leave you, you feel very bad about, oh, I should have been kinder. I should have been more, I should not have said these words. What happens if someone leaves me now? And when you get older, you find out that that's the cycle of the world. You know, people will come and people will go. And if you're good at your business, it'll keep running forever. So you don't feel bad about that.
Got it. And so if, you know, I mean, I do definitely want to pick your brains on the whole spiritual side of things, but I feel like that's for another episode.
Sure.
I'm going to end this episode with one simple question. What is the role of spirituality / God / faith in an entrepreneur's journey? Because I know that you're someone, I feel like you exude a lot of peace, and I know that that's from your meditation practice. Your practice is of spirituality. But just as an entrepreneur, what does it give you?
I think if I were to use one word, it would give me insight. You know, what happens today is if there are 100 people trying to solve the same problem and only one guy is going to really do it well, what's going to be the difference or the change maker? It's going to be deep insight. And insight cannot just come from looking at the world around you. It comes from intuition, from creativity, from a power of innovation that you didn't know exists. And how do you unleash these things within you? There's no school or college or MBA that teaches you this. It is the power of, you know, deep, you know, silence, which gives you this energy. And silence comes from being meditative.
And so, I mean, the book behind you, The Cave, is probably the signing off note for this episode. Why should people go buy that book?
It's a book of stories. So first and foremost, it's not anything else, but a bunch of stories that have a very interesting scientific and a moral and a learning, you know, at the end. It also kind of teaches you that how can it, it's called an internet entrepreneur spiritual story. So basically, it's not about some Baba or some guy who's living in an ashram and just talking some stuff. This is me, boss. You know, I build companies for a living. I'm going to build an IPO worthy company. So why is someone like me so interested in spirituality, and why do I, what do I get out of it? That's the story of this book. So you got to buy it and read it to just understand that there are very simple, practical principles that are available to you at your fingertip, which if you apply, you can improve your life 100, 200, 1000x many times.
Beautiful, sir. I'm looking forward to doing the sequel episode, which we're going to record immediately after this, but the audiences might have to wait for a couple of days. I promise the audience that that one's going to be even deeper than this one. For now, thank you, Alok, sir. This meant a lot. Thank you for allowing me to pick your brains.
Thank you.